Well, it's a pleasure to be with you in this way. So I bring greetings from Compass, and just a bit of a reminder. Compass was formerly called Mennonite Coalition for Refugee Support, MCRS, and so we only changed our name. We didn't change anything else. And one of the reasons we did that was to reflect that people were coming from all over the world to us. And just like we use a compass to navigate geography, we talk at Compass about navigating systems, navigating new life, navigating new relationships, and that moral navigation that, we do this with the heart of God. We do this because God is bringing people to us, and we are pursuing a different kingdom than this world that has displaced people and harmed many people. So back in 2021, our board said, let's get a new name, and Compass seemed to fit because we were using the language anyway of navigating, and so that's what we did. It's kind of like getting married. Some of us change our name when we get married, but it doesn't change who we are. So I just wanted to explain that a little bit because we know that that's not everybody's heard that story yet. So the other thing I did want to say is thank you, yes, very much for the participation in the ride. Bloomingdale was one of our top teams, and so we thank you for that. It is a lot of fun, but it also does have a significant impact on what we are able to do. And so it's just a great way to come together, remember that we are a community together, and that we have a common cause, and that we can also, yes, raise resources for that day-to-day work. And yesterday we had our annual general meeting. You can see the annual report on our website at compassrefugee.ca, where we celebrate what this past year brought for us with lots of amazing things. Just very briefly, we continued with our virtual law clinic, the Canada-US Border Rights Clinic. And I'll come back to that in just a little bit. We also launched Compass Immigration Solutions this year. So providing a means to help people who are not refugee claimants but have immigration needs. And the proceeds of that helps to support some of the charitable work that we do with refugee claimants. And then we are right on the cusp of working towards a dream that we've had since 2021, built around one of our strategic objectives of collaboration, and the fruit of collaboration being what we call a refugee hub. And not so much the coordination of all the different agencies that work with refugees, but the bringing together of a community that welcomes refugees and lives with them and does life with them and helps them to discover belonging and dignity again, and begin their life beyond refuge in our midst. And so we will be working really hard on that over this next year to engage people, engage churches, neighborhood associations, workers at work, employees, groups, schools, in really speaking a lot and engaging in what it means to be a community that welcomes. And this is so important at this time when you consider what is happening around the world. Every day you can read in the news about another country that is getting a harder stance towards people who are forced to move because of the circumstances that they are in. Even Canada, and I'm going to come back to that in a little bit, but some of the legislation that's before Parliament in Canada right now indicates a hardening. And we, as the church, as God's people, want to make sure that our hearts stay tender, want to make sure that we continue to see the whole person, and that we understand that God is the one that is sovereign. He's the one moving people around. Nations rise and nations fall under his direction. And we get to be on the receiving end of people whose lives have been disrupted, have been altered permanently. And we get to decide how we're going to treat them. Are we going to align with God's heart, or are we going to allow the hardening that is happening to change how we behave? As I think about the story of the Canaanite woman, I was reflecting on it again last night, just as final preparation for today. And I immediately thought of, I went for a drive back in November. I like to drive. It's just to get out and ponder some things and see what's going on out there. But I came across this field with an awful lot of sheep in it, and it was cold. It was November. The snow was down on the ground. The roads weren't all that great. But I pulled over because I honestly had never seen that many sheep in a field at once. And I'm a city girl. What can I say? But so I pulled over onto the laneway that led into the farm, and got out with my phone camera and just started taking pictures and just watching these sheep. Some of them were a little curious about me and watching me. And then all of a sudden, three dogs came racing across the field and close to the fence line and barking at me and sounding the alert and basically saying, "Don't come any closer." And I thought that was an interesting picture to come to mind because in the story that we are given with Jesus and the disciples' encounter with this woman, they are in her territory. They're no longer in, the Jewish territory. They're now in what's called the Gentile territory, the non-Israelite territory. And the way that the story unfolds, many people have thought, wow, Jesus talks about not giving bread to the dogs, and it sounds really disparaging. And a lot of people have been offended by that. And when I think about this picture, I think about these dogs protecting the sheep, being a part of the household that is watching these sheep, making sure, and I'm sure that they were cared for, they were fed, they were tended to as part of the whole household and this caring for the sheep. And I thought, what an interesting shift, maybe, as we think about it, because in the Bible, there were actually a couple of different terms used for dogs. One of them was rather an ugly term, thinking more of wild dogs that were scavengers in the streets. And in my travels internationally, I've been to countries where dogs are not domestic, they're not the family pet. And I have been warned that though they look, all cute curled up on the street, do not try to pet them because they will take your hand off. They will bite you. And they're dangerous. And that's one of the pictures that people can have in this story is that Jesus is referring to this woman like one of those dogs that is dangerous. And then there's the other picture, the other word that is used, which is more like puppy. And that cute little puppy stage, they haven't learned to be aggressive yet. They haven't learned to even be protective or defensive or aggressive or to not like people. And it's interesting that in this story, I think Jesus is playing on those two different words. And so as they come into this territory, and then this woman is asking, she is recognizing him as the son of David. That's a term we don't actually hear from the disciples in Matthew until chapter 16, the next chapter. And remembering that Matthew is putting together his stories with a purpose. It's not just, I'll pick this story now and then I'll pick this story. They're all woven together for a purpose. And he's highlighting that the disciples are not recognizing Jesus yet as the Messiah, but this woman is. She's calling out to him, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." Similar to the blind men on the road who heard that Jesus was coming along and cried out, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." And she's clearly crying out quite a bit because they're getting a little upset with her and wanting her to go away. They're seeing her as more of an annoyance, a pest. They're not there for her. And my sense is that that's exactly why they're there. Jesus is taking them on a field trip to change the labels that they have applied to people, to use a common term that would have been used of Gentiles, dogs, but not that friendly puppy term, more the term of scavenger, stay away, they're dangerous, we can't have anything to do with them. And I can picture this interaction that he's having with this woman, and she picks up on it right away, because when he gets to say, it's not right to take the bread, that belongs to the children and give it to the dogs, he uses the term puppy, and she catches it. And I can almost kind of see this smile cross between them. She knows exactly what he's saying. He's basically redeeming the term, saying, no, you're like a member of the household that you just haven't been recognized yet. And you will be tended to, you will be taken care of, you will be fed. But I've got to teach my disciples a little lesson about this. So will you play along with me, right? And she does. And so she reminds, she speaks openly that even the dogs get fed. And then there's a really neat element to this, talk about the crumbs that fall from the master's table. So there's a couple pieces here. One is the dogs are in the presence of the master. They're not excluded. They're not outside. They're moving around where the family is. But the other is the crumbs, not the abundance that might be on the table, but the crumbs are sufficient to meet the need. And so she's saying, basically, I know that even a crumb from you will rescue my daughter, will deliver her. That's all I need. I don't need any more than that because of who you are. And it's a profound lesson, I think, for the disciples because, in the world that we are in, and we're hearing the language, we don't have enough housing. We don't have enough jobs. We don't have enough. And we're getting taught this lesson that if we change our perspective and understand that God's abundance, even the overflow of that abundance, even what kind of gets thrown off, as extra, is sufficient to meet the need and to do profound things in people's lives. If we could just see it that way. I think that's a really, I think it's a profound story. I think it's a big story for all of us because we're in a time when the tone is very hard. It's getting hard. And we feel like we're getting into this time of not having enough. And we might even think about that in our own lives. We don't have enough, and we what of whatever that is. And I think children experience that. I think teenagers experience that. I think young adults experience that. I think in our later days we experience that. We worry about not having enough. And I think this story reminds us that even if we can see the crumbs, even if we can see, and it's similar to the story of the parable of the sower, the scattering of the seed and the seed that just goes all over the place. And God just saying, like, listen, I'm going to take care of you. It's going to be okay. And we're all going to work together on this. We're all together in this. And let's watch our labels. Let's make sure that we're not getting those hardened labels. We're not using the same words, but hardening the meaning of them. But let's soften and see people for who they are. And when, we talked yesterday at the AGM, we have people coming from 80 different countries over the course of any, a given period of time at Compass. They're coming from all over the place, and most of them with nothing. They've lost everything. And we had a couple of the people that we have helped share yesterday, and they talked about how they were very afraid when they first came, wondering, how are they going to be treated? Are they going to be seen? Are they going to be treated well? What's it going to be like for them to try and get established and get their needs met in our community? And they come to Compass and they feel like they're seen, that they matter to us, that they feel a kindness that they don't necessarily feel in other places. They don't leave our office hungry because we say if you come hungry, don't leave hungry. We have food there. We have hot drinks there for in the winter and cold drinks for in the summer. And it's warm and it's safe. And they get a big smile. And both of them talked about as soon as they walked in the door, they experienced just the smile and the welcome and the warmth. But then also the very clear help, listening to what their needs actually were. And not assuming what their needs were, but listening to them, letting them tell us what their needs were, and then acting to meet those needs. And not us deciding what that should look like, but helping them navigate to get what they knew they needed. That's a big part of what Compass does, aside from, that specialized work of helping people with their refugee claim. It all starts at the border for many people. We have the Canada-US Border Rights Clinic, which is a virtual clinic, so it's like this on Zoom, and people can contact. We have a couple of lawyers and a coordinator, and before they try to cross from the US into Canada, they can talk to those lawyers, make sure they have their papers in order, make sure that they're eligible to cross. Make sure that they understand what they're getting into. And what we shared yesterday is now we're also having to intervene because people are being wrongly turned away. And now what's happening, if you get turned away, it used to be, no, you just can't come. And then you've got to figure out what to do, having been turned back from the border. Now there's no just turning back. If you are refused entry to Canada, you are detained and then deported. And so the stakes are really high for people now. And a lot of people are being detained and not treated very well. It would be, some of the centers where they are held are just horrific for people. They're badly treated. They're not given proper food or hygiene or safety. Place to sleep properly. It's become quite an ugly situation. And we've had a few people that we've intervened with to because they have family here in Canada, so they're allowed to be here. And we've had to intervene to make sure that they are allowed to come across and be reunited with their families. We talked yesterday also about there's certain milestones. So once you come across and then you come to Compass or maybe another organization in another city, one of our partners, there are some milestones that we help people to reach. The first one is through that other side of that refugee claim. So we hold the hearings in our office. Again, they're virtual like this time together with the Immigration and Refugee Board. And many of the people who have those hearings do get a yes. In fact, about 90% of the people we work with do eventually get a yes. So it's wonderful for us when they come out of that hearing room and they're all excited, they got a yes. What a great milestone. And they're crying and they're happy because they now know they're going to be safe. The next milestone that we help them with is to be reunited with their family. And just this week, we had a mom message us because we had worked hard to with Canadian Council for Refugees and with the government system to get her young child, elementary age child, here to Canada. This is a big deal. You know what it's like to be separated from family by situations that you have no control over. It takes an average of 50 months, 5-0, to get children reunited with their parents now. That's the system that we are currently working with. Sometimes it happens faster, but the average is 50 months, so a little over 4 years. You can imagine how that family changes with that kind of separation. So, but that's a huge milestone to have them reunited. Many families will bring the family members that they are finally reunited with in the office to introduce us, them to us. They call us their second family while they were waiting for their first family to come. And they just want to celebrate with us. The third milestone is one that we actually have less control over, but we try to keep track of, and that is that life beyond refuge. You've got your yes to stay. You have your family here now with you, and now you need to rebuild your life together and figure out what that looks like. And one of the people that we had sharing yesterday talked about what that looked like for her 7 years later. And you know, she has started up a charitable foundation designed to bring people together at least once a year in this big celebration. And last year it brought together 350 people to celebrate all these people who were new to Canada, who had had this wonderful milestones happening in their lives, but they were now rebuilding their lives. And just to keep that hope going that life is now going to be safe and good, and their children are going to grow up and have opportunity, and they don't have to worry about being pushed out yet again. And so it's wonderful to see that the work, you know, we have a role to play, and the work continues even past us, because now it moves into the community with people like you. How do they engage with people like you, in the churches, in the workplaces, in the schools, on the soccer field, right? That is where life beyond refuge really starts to take hold. And that's a big piece of what we want to be talking about with Refugee Hub over this next year. There is one really big barrier to this right now on the table, and that is the legislation that is in front of the government. So just like the disciples with Jesus had some rules about how to treat people. They had some ideas based on their practice and their religious rules, as well as the political rules about how they would view people and treat people. We have some rules in Canada, and it's not, you know, and it's all tied to our immigration policies. And those rules have not always been good. In fact, if we look at the history of Canada with immigration, our very first immigration policy was not a good one. It resulted in people being harmed and then deported because same kind of idea. They're taking our jobs, they're taking our health care. It was the same argument. And this was back in 1913. So here we are, 113 years later, and we're still saying, oh no, they're not safe for us. The legislation that is before the government right now is called Bill C-12. It's a, you know, such a creative name, right? But Bill C-12 is part of another bill called Bill C-2. That was the first bill, and that was the Stronger Borders Act. So that's what's before the government, and it's in response to pressure from our friends to the south and ideas about how borders should work. And what is secure and what isn't secure. Bill C-2 had two major sections to it. One was this immigration piece, the other was related to your privacy, the privacy of Canadian citizens, and how much the government could wade into that privacy in order to keep Canadians safe. And that bill says that basically all of your data could now be accessed by anyone in the government or in security, RCMP, Canada Border Service agents, police agents, for your safety. So your medical information, your employment information, your personal information, your social media information could be accessed without a warrant under the guise of keeping you safe, under the guise of keeping the government's our borders secure. Understandably, everybody got a little bit upset with that part of the law. The problem was it was slowing down the whole bill, and what the government didn't want was this other part around immigration to be slowed down. So they separated it out, and that is what Bill C-12 is. There are a couple of really big problems with Bill C-12. One is if you have had time in Canada that adds up to a year plus one day or more, and you now need to be safe, you need to make a refugee claim, you will not be allowed to. You will, because you have been in the country over a period of time, even if it's back and forth, just visiting back and forth, more than a year over the last 6 years. That is going to have horrible outcomes for people. Because you can imagine somebody came for a visit in 2023. We now know the world is vastly different now than it was even in 2023. But now they can't make a refugee claim because they were here before and it all added up to more than a year. So that's the first part that is a little bit of a problem. The second big problem is if you have a refugee claim in process right now, if this bill passes, that your claim could be stopped, and all just to clear the backlog. So you could have been waiting and waiting and waiting to have your refugee claim heard, and this bill will allow it to just be taken off the books. The next piece to it is you could have had your refugee claim heard, and now you're and you got a yes, and now you're eligible to be a permanent resident. Well, the backlog for permanent resident applications is about 8 years long, and so the government can decide to just take your application off the books. And you can no longer have access to permanent residency. You could actually have now got your permanent residency. Here's the final piece that, and there's many pieces. I'm just going to cover these ones. The final piece to this is you could have your permanent residency, but you could come from a country that our country decides is not safe right now. It's a national security concern, and you can have your permanent residency revoked. So they could take, for example, everybody who's from Mexico. Let's say we ended up in this big conflict with Mexico. Everybody who's got a permanent residency status and they're originally from Mexico could have that permanent residency revoked, putting them back into this temporary, precarious situation. That's what Bill C-12 is about. And the feeling is from many organizations that are approaching the government about this, saying, hold on, this is not good, is that Canadians are going to be okay with this as long as their own privacy is protected. That's why they separated it out. And this is strikes completely back to this passage in Matthew or John, and both of those writers are speaking to this thing. That somehow we can, at the stroke of a pen, change somebody's life because of how we view them. That's really what Jesus is talking about here. And we can't do that. So, not as followers of Christ, not as sheep in his, under the great shepherd, we can't do that to other people. We can't be okay with that. And so, this year, Compass Refugee has the theme called Courageous Welcome. And we're saying it's not just a matter of being kind to the people who are coming into our midst and helping them along. We need to speak up. We need to have some courage this next year and say to our MPs, say to those we hear speaking badly, no. And we're gonna risk some of our comfort to ensure the safety of others. And so that's a little bit about Compass. And we can do that in our classrooms. We can do that in our neighborhoods. We can do that in our workplaces. We can do that in our churches. In fact, we would say the church needs to lead the way in this because we know the heart of God. And the world is not going to recognize people the way we are called to recognize people. So we call people to join us in this, and we'll be reaching out a little bit later in the probably closer to the spring to gather together some people to say, how can we do this better together and really create a community here, but also beyond us, communities of welcome that say, this is the Canada we believe in, that we are building, and we want to make sure that nobody feels like they are the scavenger dog. They are the dog, the pet, the part of the family, and we're all part of it together. And we all have a place. Those are my thoughts for today.